welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this, our adventure, later on we hear the story Beirut by Sunrise, on suspense, but right now it's Escape, with a tale of intrigue called Border Town, from December 13th, 1949, on CBS, starring Jack Webb and William Conrad.
Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
It all started on the bus just outside of Dallas. The sailor who had snored beside me since Memphis got off and the big fat guy got on. He overflowed into my half of the seat, and for sound effect, he ate one apple after another. He must have bought them by the sack. Hey, fella, do you mind? My top coat?
Oh.
I'd like to have it pressed, but I prefer a tailor to do it. I pulled the coat out from under him. He'd smashed my carton of cigarettes almost flat. From then on, I held the coat in my lap. In my mind, he was symbolic of everything connected with this trip and with my life. Second rate, middle class, mediocre. I was on my way to Hollywood. Yeah, I'm an actor. Under personal contract to Henry Slafta, big director. Oh, it sounds impressive, but it isn't. It's one of those insignificant stock contracts with short options and shorter dough. I should have turned it down, but I was flat broke, on my heels. That's why, when I found the money, I did what I did.
Okay, folks, we're stopping here for 15 minutes.
Another stop, chance to stretch. Well, I had a cup of coffee and a spud nut in the depot, and I was starting back to the bus when I saw him, my apple-chewing friend. Two men with cop written all over them were leading him out of the bus. It was a pinch. I wondered why they'd picked him up. I really didn't care why they took him as long as he didn't come back. Now I had the seat to myself. But he'd done me a final courtesy. He'd knocked my top coat onto the floor and walked on it.
Okay, everybody on. Let's go.
From then on into El Paso, he was the topic of conversation.
He didn't look like a criminal to me.
My dear, didn't you hear what the bus driver said? The man's a counterfeiter, one of the smartest ones in the country. The police have been after him for ages.
A counterfeiter? How exciting. I must get off at El Paso and send a postcard back to Madge. Won't she be thrilled for me?
Counterfeiter. Well, that's the last thing I would have pegged him for. El Paso, and Hollywood still 24 long hours away. Well, economy or no economy, I wasn't going to go on. I was dead tired, saddle sore from 3 days and nights on that bus. So I switched my ticket to the following day, and I hunted up a cheap hotel. The bellhop there was full of helpful ideas on how I could spend the evening.
Well, how about Juarez, mister?
Juarez, huh?
Yeah, old Mexico, just across the International Bridge.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten that this is a border town. No, no thanks. I just want to get some sleep.
Sure, mister. It's up to you.
I tipped the kid and stretched out on the bed. I dug in my pocket for a cigarette, but I was out, so I reached into my top coat for the carton. That's when I found it. A package of money. A lot of money. All in 50s and 100s. Nice, clean, fresh bills. I counted them fast. $15,000 worth. So that's why I found my coat on the floor of the bus. Fatso had stashed his homemade money in my pocket. Why, the lousy... I'd fix his wagon, planning it on me. Operator, give me the FB... No. No, never mind. Wait a minute. Why should I? If I turned it in, I might get involved, and I couldn't afford to. When I got to Hollywood, Hollywood... Boy, what an entrance I could make into that town if all this dough were only real. I could just picture the look on Henry Slafta's face if I flew into Hollywood with a new wardrobe, stopped at the Ambassador, took a suite, made a big splash. Yeah, if only the dough were real. Well, I couldn't sleep now. I was too stirred up, so I took a shower and changed my clothes and went out. I didn't have anything particular in mind, but Since the hotel was near the International Bridge, I went over into Juarez. And I wasn't quite sure why I did it, but in my pocket was one of the $50 bills. I went up and down the cheap main drag, sampling tequila and brushing off vendors of huaraches and leather dolls, just like the rest of the tourists. But all the time, that $50 bill was burning a hole in my pocket. It was in a small bar, a crummy place called El Serape, that I finally took a chance. I'd had a couple of tequila daisies, and each time I'd given the waiter a half a buck. This time I handed him the $50 bill. I held my breath. Suddenly, I knew I'd been a fool. He didn't put it in the cash registers, he had the other money. Instead, he went down to the end of the bar and handed it to a man sitting there, obviously an American. He took it, looked at it, and had the waiter point me out. I got up out of the booth and started for the street, but the American caught me at the door.
I'm Chuck Rice. I'm the manager.
Yeah. Hiya.
You give this $50 bill to the waiter?
Yeah. I guess I forgot to wait for my change, huh?
You don't want to go around forgetting money like this. Just visiting?
Yeah, tourist.
You know, you're taking a big chance. You're setting yourself up like a pigeon.
Well, what are you talking about? What do you mean?
Don't get excited, amigo. This is border town, that's all. The wrong people might get the idea that you're carrying more bills like this.
Yeah, well, I'm not.
Yeah, sure. But if you were, I could put you in touch with most anything. Maybe a little gambling. We could fix you up with a little game.
Uh-uh.
Anything you want to buy, I can get it for you.
No, I don't want to buy anything. But suppose I wanted to sell something.
Sell, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That's a little tougher. I'd have to see a sample.
You got it, mister, right there in your hand. I was taking a crazy chance, but I've kicked around Broadway long enough to know a contact man when I run into one, and Chuck Rice was definitely shady. He stood there scowling, turning the bill over and over in his hand.
Oh, so that's why you wanted to walk out on your change, huh? Thought I had it spotted. You got more like this?
Yeah.
On you?
No, I'm not that much of a pigeon.
How much more?
Enough.
And you want to dump it?
Maybe, with the right kind of a deal.
Here's your 50 back. I don't know from nothing about this kind of commodity.
Well, I didn't pay for the drink.
It's all right, it's on the house. Your money's no good here.
I took the 50 and put it in my pocket. I shrugged and hoped my indifference went over. I was almost to the street when he called after me.
Hey, amigo.
Huh?
I was just wondering. How much you got?
Why?
Well, if you got enough, maybe Nieves would be interested.
Nieves? Who's Nieves?
Down here, we don't ask questions like that. You go to the cab stand on the corner. Ask for Miguel. Tell him you want to see Nieves. Tell him Chuck Rice sent you. Only this time, amigo, if you want to do business, you better have the dough on you.
Miguel. Hey, I'm talking to you. What's the idea? You keep going around in circles.
Quien sabe, senor.
Quien sabe my foot. I want to go to Nieves.
Si, senor. Si, Nieves.
Well, let's get going. Never mind the sightseeing.
Miguel was driving down dark back alleys and dirt roads. I couldn't tell which direction we were going, and I'm sure that was the idea. But we were getting further and further out of town. I was beginning to wish I didn't have the money on me. I hadn't gone back to the hotel for it when Miguel suddenly pulled off the road into a ruddy gopher-hole courtyard of a broken-down hacienda. It was littered with debris. I stumbled over a peg. His squeals woke a bunch of chickens roosting on a fence. Then I saw her. She was lying in a canvas hammock, one bare foot hanging over the side, deep in the enjoyment of an oversized cigarette. She seemed asleep except for the rhythmic puffs of smoke. She never opened her eyes all the time I was there. Nieves?
Si.
Chuck Rice sent me. He thought we might be able to work out a deal. I got some money. I want to sell it. Chuck Rice said that you might handle it.
You hear me?
Si.
I got $15,000 American in 50s and hundreds.
How much you want?
What'll you give me?
How much?
Well, I figure 5,000 would be fair.
No touch.
What?
If that's all you want, I no touch.
Why?
Too hot.
Well, if you think it's worth more.
No touch.
Okay, no touch. Come on, Miguel.
Si, senor.
Senor?
Yeah.
O'Toole.
What was that?
O'Toole, maybe he buy.
O'Toole? Where's O'Toole?
Miguel, no.
Si, senor. Come, I will take you.
Well, your English is improving, Miguel. Maybe your sense of direction will improve, too. And it did. As the crow flies, so did we, straight to O'Toole's Dine and Dance, a gaudy tourist trap hypoed on the outside with neon signs advertising the best food and music in Juarez, while inside, five Latin beboppers were making hash out of Embraceable You. Miguel okayed me to a squint-eyed character who reluctantly led me down a hall, up a steep flight of stairs. We stopped in front of a door.
Come in.
Behind a huge red lacquered desk sat a handsome Chinese in a dinner jacket smoking a long black cigar.
Ah, good evening. What can I do for you? A drink, perhaps?
No, no thanks. I came to see O'Toole.
Yes, I am O'Toole.
You, O'Toole?
As one of those cliques of nature. I wear my mother's face and my father's name.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything.
Well, think nothing of it, Mr. Smith.
Yeah, Smith.
Now, you have something you wish to sell?
That's right.
May I see the money?
Money? How did you know?
$15,000, as I understand it. How much do you want for it?
6,000.
You told Nieves. Why?
Nieves?
Oh, you're surprised. I know about that. Huh? Chuck Rice always sends them out to the country to see Nieves before they come to me. Now, let me see the money. All of it.
Sure. Here. Look, I'll take the five.
I'll give you four.
Oh, now, wait a minute. There's 15,000 there. You won't have any trouble passing it in Mexico.
I know that. I also know that when this kind of money turns up in this part of the world, it means only one thing. I am your last resort. Well, Mr. Smith?
Yeah. Give me the 4,000. He went to the safe, got the money, and paid me. I got out of his office. Well, maybe I should have held out for more, but he gave me the creeps. Besides, any way you look at it, 4,000's a lot of money. I could knock Henry slapped his eyes out with less than that. Downstairs in the club, the floor show was on. An Adagio team was going through its calisthenics. I was just passing the bar when she bumped into me.
Hello, Charlie.
No, I'm not Charlie.
Sure you're Charlie. You gotta be Charlie.
Go on, beat it.
Come on. Don't be a sucker. We're being watched.
Well, so what am I supposed to do?
Be smart. Buy me a drink.
Look, I told you, I'm not interested.
Interested in getting out of here alive?
What kind of a crack is that?
You see Squint Eyes over there by the entrance? Well, he's not the doorman.
Come on, look, what's this all about?
O'Toole. He wants back whatever it is he gave you.
I'll buy you that drink. Come on.
Make it scotch.
Yeah. Bartender, two scotch and sodas. All right. Now tell me why you're interested.
I'm supposed to knock you out.
Your what?
Those two drinks you just ordered. Yours will be loaded. And not with Romo quinine to cure your cold. Ever hear of knockout drops, tourist?
Yeah, sure, but I don't get it. What are you telling me for?
I don't know. Maybe because you're from my side of the border. Maybe because you don't look like the kind of scum that usually comes in this joint.
All right. So my drink's gonna be loaded, and Squint Eyes is over to the front door to make sure I don't get away. I don't have much choice, do I?
Yeah, you do. I'm gonna help you.
Help me.
After the drink hits you, I'm supposed to get you out the back door into the alley and then roll you.
Well, now, that'll be a big help.
But I'm not going to. Quiet. Here come the drinks.
All right, what do I do now?
When I reach around you for the ashtray, they won't be able to see you. Switch the drinks. You drink mine.
Yeah, but how about
they
you?
They don't expect me to drink it.
Yeah, but you...
Now, switch them. Get it down. Drink it. In a minute, pretend you're dizzy. I'll help you get to the alley. And when you get there, you better run, brother. And run fast.
Squint Eyes had left the door and was coming toward the bar, so I did what she told me. After I'd gulped the drink down, I sat on the stool a couple of minutes, and I pretended to get dizzy. She helped me off the stool, put my arm around her shoulder. We were almost to the door, almost to the alley. It was just perfect, except for one thing. I was dizzy. My stomach turned over and over, and I passed out cold. The smells were the same. Beer, tequila, stale black tobacco. But the sound had changed. There'd been music before. My stomach burned and my head throbbed, and somebody was lying across me. I raised up, tried to focus my eyes, but I couldn't. Gradually, I placed the sound. It was some kind of a car, bus. No, a truck. I was lying on the floor in the back of a truck, and there was a man lying across me. From the stench of him, he must have been drunk for a week, but from the inert way he lay, he could have been dead. I pushed him off and shook him.
Hey.
Where are we going? What is this? Hey, come on, wake up, will you? Listen to me. Then I suddenly remembered the money. The $4,000. It was gone. I was clean, broke. I'd been rolled all right, and by a dame who even told me before she did it. Then I saw the rest of them. The truck was a big van, and it was loaded, packed with the dregs of border town, a sodden human cargo. All of them filthy, bleary-eyed. But one of them looked awake and reasonably sober. Hey, you over there. You speak English?
Si, senor.
Well, what happened? What are we doing here?
Oh, we all fall drunk, senor. Oh, it's no good to fall drunk. Oh, you go to Hensler's.
Hensler's?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Oh, caray. No es bueno. Oh, I have been there before. I should know not to fall drunk. Oh, one whole month I have been there. Ese lugar es muy feo.
Oh. You've been where before? Where are they taking us? Tell me.
To Hensler's. Oh, he's a very bad man.
Hensler's? Well, who's Hensler?
Oh, you're going to see, senor. You will see.
That's all I could get out of him. We were going to Hensler's, and it wouldn't be good. And it sounded like I was about to find out.
All right, you guys, come on. The party's over. Hey, Miller, move these crips along.
Come on.
You guys don't look like no bunch of daisies, but we'll make you bloom, won't we, Miller?
He was a brute of a man, and he carried a .45 in a holster. He and the driver, Miller, herded us out of the truck like so many cattle. It was some sort of a road gang. I saw a sign blocking the road that read, Under Construction, Hensler Construction Company. Well, I had no idea where we were, how far away from the border. The landscape was dry, dusty, barren.
Well, Gonzalez, you with us again? Didn't we learn you not to get drunk, huh? Come on, you guys, step on it.
All right, quit shoving.
Come on, come. Hey, what are you doing here?
Yeah, that's what I'd like to know.
Miller! How many times I got to tell you to be careful who you pick up?
Now, wait a minute, Jay. Don't get sore before I tell you.
Don't you know we can get in plenty of trouble picking up the wrong guys?
I didn't pick him up. O'Toole threw him in.
O'Toole?
Shut up, you. What O'Toole wish him on us for? What'll Hensler hear about
this? Yeah, well, O'Toole has already talked with Hensler. He says this fellow will not give us any trouble. He is an embezzler. The police are looking for him.
Yeah, crazy.
He came across the border to sell some money he had stolen from a bank or something. He must be plenty hot. He was willing to drop 15,000 real dough for 4,000 cash.
Real dough? What are you talking about? That was counterfeit I sold O'Toole.
Listen, buddy, I don't know what your racket is, but nobody fools O'Toole about money.
But it can't be real money. It was counterfeit, I tell you. It had to be. Look, I want to see Hensler.
You talk to me or you talk to nobody?
But I got to see Hensler. I got to get back to Juarez.
Huh? Did you hear that, Miller? He's got to get back to Juarez.
All right, look, you can't push me around. I'm an American.
Oh, he's an American. Well, send this to your congressman. Okay, American. Get on your feet. Get a pick and start working.
Hensler Construction Company. Just another name for a chain gang. I never saw Hensler. He wasn't there. But in the next week, I got to know Jake all right. I got to hate him. He drove us from dawn till dark, digging a roadbed by hand, pick and shovel, in the hot sun, in the dust, without rest. But worse than the physical torture was the thought that gave me no rest. I'd sold O'Toole real money. For now, I realized I'd never really had any proof that the fat man was a counterfeiter. I just jumped to that conclusion. The bus driver... No, not the bus driver. A woman on the bus said that the bus driver said it, and it drove me crazy just thinking about it. Real money. $15,000. I'd had it in my hand, and I'd thrown it away. I had to escape. I had to. There'd been a man in the truck who said he'd been here before, so he must have gotten away somehow. He could help me. You're the man that was here before?
I am, Gonzalez.
All right, you got away the other time, didn't you?
I see. But I am back. And this time I don't try to go.
Well, how did you go? How'd you get out?
Well, there is a highway.
There is? Where?
4 miles, 5 miles. Many cars pass there.
Just 4 or 5 miles? That's nothing.
Oh. Maybe it sound nothing to you, senor. But those are bad miles to go. Oof, caray.
Only 4 or 5 miles. Over that way, he told me. Through the ravine. Well, I thought about it all that day, and I planned that I'd try it that night. But when we got back to camp, I was too dog tired even to eat. I just flopped on the hard earth and fell asleep. It seemed that I'd just closed my eyes when I was shaken awake.
Hey.
Huh?
Hey. Get up, American. Get on your feet.
Huh?
I got a little job for you.
Oh, leave me alone, Jake. I'm tired.
Get up! You're on overtime.
Murderously drunk. He had a bottle of whiskey in one hand and his .45 in the other. So I got up off the ground. All around me, the men were sleeping. If they heard him, they didn't pay any attention. He marched me down to the roadbed and threw a pick at me.
There. I'll start digging.
But it's the middle of the night. Look, I'm dead.
I gotta finish the road. Start digging, I said.
What are you picking on me for, Jake? Why me?
You gonna start digging, or do I start shooting?
So I dug. I dug till my hands were bleeding and my lungs were scalded with the effort of breathing. He sat alongside the road, knocking off that fifth of whiskey and riding me every time I faltered. He was just mean drunk enough to kill me if I stopped. So I dug and I dug. Finally, I couldn't go on anymore. I was too tired to care. I dropped the pick and fell onto the road. My face was in the dirt. I lay there, panting, waiting for the bullet. When it didn't come, I turned my head, and what I saw gave me new life. Jake was sprawled out, dead drunk, and the .45 had slipped from his hand onto the ground. It was my chance. I hardly had enough strength left to move, but I knew if I didn't go then, it'd be too late. I'd never get away. I crawled over to him, and I got the gun, and somehow, I got down the road and through that ravine, stumbled and crawled those hideous miles of the highway. And then I heard it, way down the road. It was a car. I ran out like a madman and flagged it down.
Monde usted?
Give me a ride, will you?
Oh, you're an American, huh? Going back to the States?
Yeah.
Well, hop in.
I leaned back against the seat, shut my eyes, and slept all the way into Juarez.
Well, here you are. You said O'Toole's dying to dance. Sure I can't wait for you?
No. No, thanks just the same, but I got some business to take care of.
Okay. Good luck.
$15,000 worth of business, and Jake's 45 in my pocket to guarantee the deal. I went around to that back door and slipped in quietly, and then crept down the hall and up the stairs that Squint Eyes had led me before. This time I entered O'Toole's office without knocking. Hello, O'Toole.
Oh. I didn't expect you back so soon. Sit down. Can I get you something?
Yeah, you can. $15,000.
I'm afraid I don't understand. We made a deal.
Why didn't you tell me the money was real, not counterfeit, huh?
Well, you seem to know what you were doing, and remember, you placed the value on the money. I did not.
Yeah, well, I've just revalued it. I want it back, all of it.
We made a deal, and I paid you, and I'm through with you.
And you rolled me.
How you lost the money I paid you is no concern to me.
All right, then, look, then maybe this will be some concern to you. I took enough punishment to get this gun, not to hesitate to use it. Now get the money while you're still alive.
Ah, that won't be necessary. How about, 10,000?
Look, don't stall. 15.
But I should be allowed to realize some profit.
Hurry up, O'Toole. I haven't got all day.
I'll have to open this safe.
Then open it.
Will you take it in 10s and 20s?
Now, look, you, I don't care how you give it to me, so long as it's American money. Now quit stalling and get it. I didn't trust him. I expected any minute he'd pull something fast, but he didn't. He gave it to me. I never realized before the power of a gun. It makes short men tall and tall men strong.
Here you are.
Thanks. Now I could fly to Hollywood and have that suite at the Ambassador and throw a cocktail party, a big party. I'd show 'em. First, I stopped at the best men's shop in Juarez and got myself outfitted. An important English tweed suit, cashmere top coat, couple of dozen shirts, and I threw away my old clothes.
There will be something else, senor.
I'll take that alligator suitcase, too.
Si, senor, but you must remember when you go through customs, you must declare the clothes you are wearing. I have to report this
sale. Oh, sure, sure, don't worry. And these neckties?
Si, senor.
I paid him. It was more than I'd spent on clothes in 10 years. I put $500 in my wallet and stashed the rest of the money away in my suitcase. Then I went to the American Club for a good dinner. Now I was all set to make my entrance. All I needed was a plane reservation for Hollywood. I was just going through customs when he ran up.
That is the man. Stop him.
It was the
Stop
clerk from the men's shop, gesturing wildly. The customs official listened, and then he came back to me.
I'm sorry, sir, but I have to detain you.
What?
Your wallet, if you please.
Well, wait, I didn't buy the wallet from him.
If you please, sir, give it to me.
Okay, but it's just an American Hickok wallet, I tell you.
I'm not interested in the wallet itself, sir. Well, we shall see.
There. You see? Did I not tell you? Look. Look, all of it.
What are you guys doing with my money?
You admit this is your money, mister?
Of course it is.
Then I'm sorry you'll have to come with me.
But why?
Because, mister, all the money in your wallet is counterfeit.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson.
Escape on Tuned to Yesterday from December 13th, 1949 on CBS. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now time for suspense with a story previously heard on CBS on the Kathy and Elliot Lewis prestige program On Stage. It's Richard Chanley's story, Beirut or Beirut by Sunrise. From May 31st, 1955 on CBS, produced and directed by Anthony Ellis, we hear Hi Averback, Don Diamond, Jack Crucian, and Elliot Lewis's future wife, Mary Jane Croft.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, the story of a school teacher who finds the unexpected on a Mediterranean cruise. We call it Beirut by Sunrise. So now, starring Miss Mary Jane Croft, here is tonight's suspense play, Beirut by Sunrise.
Darling sister, as I told you last, this Mediterranean cruise just hasn't been what I expected. We've sailed from Beirut, but I'm still shaking. After yesterday, honestly, I was positive I'd never see this good old ship again. It's hard to believe my trip to the Near East began as disappointingly as it did. That first stop at Port Said was dreadful. Not that I thought there'd be perfumed nights, but I was hoping I'd feel a little of the mystery of it all. When we left for Beirut, the only stimulating thing was the new dinner companion at our table, a Mr. Haroon. At least, he looked interesting compared to that awfully dull Frank Grady I'd been forced to sit alone with until now.
Frank Grady, Mr. Haroon.
Mr. Grady?
This is Miss Gideon, Mildred Gideon.
How do you do?
Miss Gideon, charmed. You are both Americans?
We're Americans. I am from Akron, Ohio. Miss Gideon's from North Dakota. Teaches school, third grade.
How charming.
Haroon, that name's a...
Persian.
Oh, yes, of course.
They say Beirut's really something to see.
Beirut. One should see it at sunrise for the first time. A thrilling sight.
Oh, swell. We hit there in the night. How about a sunrise date, teacher?
Well, I really hadn't planned on it.
Well, it's okay by me. Can't say I didn't offer. Well, Beirut, here we come.
Beirut, here we come. Honestly, he just made me wince. Companions are half the fun, but really, you couldn't commune with anything with Frank Grady around. I was darned if I'd share Beirut by sunrise with him. It was around 5 when I woke. I felt a little thrill when I realized the engines had stopped and we were there. It was dawn when I reached the deck. I was alone. It was marvelously still, like everything holding its breath. Then, just a crack of sunlight and spires of minarets began to appear. Then domes, the whole sweeping outline of the city, rising out of the night. It was just pure Omer Khayyam. I floated with it, completely carried away by the sight in that magic quiet. Then, wouldn't you know something had to spoil it? Down on the dock below, some man had come stumbling out of one of those shadows. Honestly, just reeling. It was still pretty dark, but I could see he was a sailor. An American sailor, coming toward the ship. He looked up, I saw his face. It was filled with pain. Then he swayed and fell. Tried to drag himself. I don't know why I did it, but there just wasn't anyone else around any place, and I was positive he needed help. What happened to you? Can I help?
The sailor.
What?
Message. Listen.
Yes?
Sultan's turret. Yes? 15 step. Tell it to... Tell it...
Then I saw it. A knife buried in his back. He just died. I turned and ran. Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, you are American. What are you running from, mademoiselle?
Down the street, back there on the dock. Oh, are you a police?
Yes, mademoiselle, Beirut police. I presume you are from the passenger ship?
Yes, that's right. On the dock, there's a dead man. A sailor, there's a knife in his back.
Yes, of course. Now, what is it you wish me to do?
Do? Well, he's just lying there, dead.
Isn't it a little early for dead bodies, mademoiselle? A sailor? Baron. You're sure he's not just drunk?
Drunk? I told you there's a knife in his back. Well, you could take a look, you know. You can almost see it from here.
Please, I don't mean to doubt you, but...
Look, I'm only telling you what I saw. I didn't imagine this. It just happened. The poor man's dead.
American tourist. All right, mademoiselle, I shall accompany you to the dead body.
Well... Now, you see? I was standing right up there on the deck.
Yes, I see. Now, where exactly?
Just at the edge of those packing cases. I don't want to look.
Mademoiselle.
Oh, please, I couldn't bear to look.
There is nothing here.
What? This is the exact place.
You're sure?
I swear they must have moved him.
They?
Well, someone...
Mademoiselle, when a man is drunk...
He wasn't drunk, believe me. There was a knife in his back.
Then there should be blood. There is no blood.
Look, I saw it.
Possibly the shadow.
I swear I saw it. He was dead.
With a body, there is little we can do. You agree?
Yes, but you don't believe I saw anything, do you?
Something, yes. Beirut is a modern city, but it still has charm. Sometimes a visitor is overwhelmed.
Well, I don't understand it. I'm not wearing my glasses, but... Well, it was so real. Well,
their report will be filled. Now, if I may escort you back to the ship.
All right. I don't understand it, but all right. I felt absolutely ridiculous. The policeman couldn't help thinking I was only a giddy, excited tourist. Saying any more would just make it worse. I looked back at the place. It was broad daylight now, and everything did look different. Well, there wasn't anything to do except try and push it out of my mind if I was going to enjoy Beirut at all. When I got to my cabin, I put some cold water on my face and went up for breakfast.
Hey, you're late this morning, teacher. Oversleep, did you?
No. I was just buying some film for my camera at the ship store. Good morning, Mr. Haroon.
Good morning.
Well, Beirut, here we are. Hey, see the sunrise, teacher. Thanks for the suggestion, Mr. Haroon. It was really something.
Did you see the sunrise, Mr. Grady?
Well, sure, through my porthole.
Not from the deck?
No, I just got out of bed, took a look, went back to sleep.
Oh.
It looks like a pretty good town, a little on the gaudy side. You're signed up for the tour, aren't you?
I haven't yet.
Well, you better hurry.
Are you going on the tour, Mr. Haroon?
I am familiar with Beirut.
Oh, well, then you must know those little out-of-the-way places that tourists ordinarily don't see.
Some? The Street of the Seven Nightingales?
Oh, I'm just dying to see something like that. Well, you know, tours are so commercial.
You want to see some of that hoochie-coochie stuff. Why, teacher,
that's not what I mean, Mr. Grady. If you were at all sensitive, you'd... Oh. You understand, don't you, Mr. Haroon?
A touch of Omar Khayyam?
Oh, that's it. That's it exactly, to be a part of it. To see and feel antiquity with someone who...
I could show you, Miss Gideon.
You must think I'm rather forward, but...
But unfortunately, I have business.
Oh, I see.
The tour is really excellent. It will not disappoint you. I have taken it myself.
Sure, there's still time to sign up. We'll have big time, just like Port said.
Well, I guess I'd better go get my things.
Atta girl. I'll go put your name down.
See you this evening, Mr. Haroon?
You will have a nice time, I am sure.
Yes. Well, goodbye.
Meet you at the gangplank, teacher. Now, hurry up.
The Bazaar of the Husat El Din. 300 years old. Now, you'll have a half hour to observe the interesting native handiwork and make purchases.
This is some joint. Just like a Hollywood set, eh, teacher?
My name is Mildred Gideon, Mr. Grady.
Oh, sure. Hey, get a load of those shoes they're selling. Now, wouldn't you get the razz if you clumped around home in those?
It's the style here.
Well, sure, I realize that, but wouldn't you get the razz? I think I'll buy a pair. Hey, Sahib.
The marketplace of Rashamir, 500 years old, a former slave market. You will have a half hour to observe the interesting native handiwork and make...
Slave market.
This dump doesn't look like the one in the movies.
Really, Mr. Grady, do you have to compare everything with home? Use your imagination. Let it come to you. The camels coming in carrying new slaves for sale. The slave dealers cracking whips. Can't you see it?
Say, that's pretty good. Did you read it somewhere?
Oh, forget it. Just forget it. I gave up after that. Frank Grady was going to be Frank Grady, and that's all there was to it. I tried to slip away, be alone for a minute, but he was just like a leech.
Teacher, better stick with me. You don't want to get lost, do you?
I was just about ready to call it quits, go back to the ship, find a good book to read, when...
The next point of interest is El Kasir, the Sultan's turret.
The Sultan's turret? That seemed familiar. I was certain I'd heard that name before. Then it suddenly hit me. The sailor. The dead sailor. He'd said, message, Sultan's turret, 15th step. Oh, I could have kicked myself for not remembering for that policeman. It was a big stone tower, broken down in places, but it was solid and real. Proof that I hadn't imagined that poor man. My heart was simply pounding. I couldn't wait to get inside.
As a watchtower by the Sultan Ahmed Kassir. Now, the upper half has been condemned as unsafe, but...
It was dark inside, just little lights near the showcases. I looked around for the steps. In one of the corners, I saw them curving upward. They were roped off. I edged away from the others, praying Frank Grady wouldn't see me. I slipped under the rope, started up. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. It was very dark, only a glimmer of light. I waited. Felt as if there was someone else there in the shadows. Then a tiny white something caught my eye, a piece of paper. I picked it up. I looked at it. There was writing. It said, Ship 6. That's all.
Well, Miss Gideon.
Mr. Haroon.
I have been waiting for you.
Listening to Beirut by Sunrise, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. You can't shortchange today's students in their classrooms and hope that tomorrow's leaders will be up to the international competition. Give a thought to how well today's schools can train tomorrow's leaders. Join your local groups fighting for better schools. And now, we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Miss Mary Jane Croft, starring in tonight's production of Beirut by Sunrise, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I really did not mean to frighten you.
Don't come near me.
All right.
What are you doing up here?
I too like forbidden places. I knew the tour would arrive here about this time. Fortunately, I finished my business early, so I came to meet you. Is that so frightening?
No, I guess not.
I thought you might like me to show you what I know of the city. You are all right now?
Oh, yes, I'm all right. Mr. Haroon, was there anyone else up here just a minute ago?
No. You and I are the only curious ones.
Oh, no. No, there had to be someone. I've got proof.
Proof?
Hey, teacher! Mildred! Where are you? Hey, we're leaving!
Mr. Grady. Well, shall we go down?
Oh, no, please, let's wait till they go. I've had just about enough of Mr. Grady.
Teacher!
They will think you are lost.
Oh, let them. I've got to talk to you, Mr. Haroon. Somebody, I've just got to.
I know of a charming place. We will talk there.
We waited for the tour to leave. Then I took hold of Mr. Haroon's arm and we started down those awful stairs. It seemed like hours to go through the darkness, and I shuddered all the way to the bottom. Then we were out in the sunlight, and I felt like breathing again. We walked. It gave me a chance to pull myself together. Finally, we stopped in front of a little place. It didn't look like anything from the outside. And Mr. Haroon opened the door, and we went in.
What do you think of it?
Oh, it's just charming. This garden, it's the Arabian Nights. It must be very old.
They say Omar Khayyam once visited here.
Oh, well, you can tell. Come, fill the cup, and in the fire of spring your winter garment of repentance fling.
The bird of time has but a little way to flutter, and the bird is on the wing.
You know the rubaiyat.
Some of it I remember.
Oh, I'm dreaming again. Just couldn't be real.
Oh, it is real, all right. Miss Gideon, back at the Sultan's turret.
What?
You said you wanted to tell me something.
Oh, yes, that.
Well?
Well, it's been so strange all day. First I see beauty, then death. Then it was gone. And suddenly terror again. And now this beauty, all without warning. I want to remember this place without anything to spoil it. Please take me somewhere else.
Aren't you carrying this romantic theme a little too far?
What do you mean?
I mean... All right. I will take you someplace a little less overwhelming.
Look, it's almost sunset. Funny I didn't realize it was so late.
Just this place, and we will go back to the ship.
Oh, up these stairs?
If you please.
Oh, the view. There's the harbor. There's our ship. We'll make it back in time, won't we?
In here, Miss Gideon.
Oh, it's a nice room, but I... Oh, the view from this window. It's lovely. Is that what we came to see?
Not exactly.
Mr. Haroon, I don't know whether I'll be sad or glad to leave Beirut, but this time with you has
Miss Gideon.
Yes?
Time is growing short. We must discontinue
I know it's growing short, Mr. Haroon. Short the time, but long my memory for that garden and the moments there.
I am not sure whether you are extremely clever or extremely foolish.
Foolish? Oh, no, Mr. Haroon, please, not foolish. I thought you realized what I truly feel.
This place is not romantic, Miss Gideon. You can stop it now.
Stop it?
You have caused me a great deal of trouble, and I am finished playing games.
Mr. Haroon.
What happened on the stairs of the Sultan's turret? You are going to tell me, Miss Gideon, what time is the meeting?
Meeting?
The masquerade is over. Do not force me. You know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Death and terror, Miss Gideon. Come here. You recognize this?
The sailor. The dead sailor. You murderer! You murderer!
Stop! Stop!
I ran. Just ran. The vision of the dead man on the floor of the room still in my eyes. And Mr. Haroon was coming after me. He was going to kill me. I knew he was going to kill me. I didn't know where I was or how to get back to the ship. And it got darker and darker. The streets twisted and turned in front of me. A shadow after shadow, growing bigger and bigger. I had to get to the ship, but I didn't know how. Oh, my leg. Oh, a dirty, ugly man appeared beside me. I backed away from him. He slithered after me. And then I felt my back against a wall. Walls all around. There wasn't any way out. I could feel a scream gathering in my throat. I saw a door just out of reach. I edged toward it. It was a big room, dim and evil smelling. There were people, but they didn't pay any attention to me. They were watching a dancing girl weaving through a greasy yellow light. I saw another door and slid along the wall toward it. And he was there, following me. Keep away from me! Keep away!
Mildred! Mildred!
Frank!
Mildred, hey, teacher! Oh,
Frank! Frank Grady!
Here, over this way! That's it, there! Hey!
Oh, Frank! I'm never so glad to see anybody in all my life.
Well, what happened to you? I've been looking all over. You know, the ship's almost ready to leave.
He was going to kill me.
Who was going to kill you?
That horrible, terrible Mr. Haroon. Let's get to the ship, please.
No. Wait a minute. I got to know what time that drop is.
Drop?
The message you got at the Sultan's turret. I know you got her. You wouldn't have ditched me.
What?
The film, documents on the film teacher. A little white slip of paper tells place and time, and you got it. Now, you forget your act, and I'll forget mine.
Sailor, he said tell it to...
To me, to Frank Grady. He was my contact. You got in the way.
No, no!
Come on, now, give me that paper.
Let go!
Look, teacher, give me that paper. I'll kill you. I mean it.
Grady!
What?
Miss Gideon?
Miss what? Mr. Haroon, don't touch me.
No, it is all right. Everything is all right, I assure you.
All right? Where am I?
A pilot's launch, Miss Gideon. I'm escorting you back to the ship once more.
Policeman.
We are sorry you had to go through as much as you did.
It was imperative to find out which one was the spy, Mr. Grady or you.
Spy?
Dealers in state documents, collected and sold to the highest bidder. We knew someone would meet the sailor.
Oh, I see now. Then you didn't...
He was stabbed in a street brawl before he could reach the ship.
Unfortunately, you complicated things also, for us as well as Mr. Grady. I am sorry I had to treat you roughly at the house on the hill.
Because you thought I... And I thought you... Oh, Mr. Haroon, I'm so glad I was wrong about you. I don't mind anything now.
I am staying here in Beirut. I wish you a pleasant trip and bon voyage.
Perplexed no more with human or divine.
And tomorrow's tangle to the winds resign.
Thank you, Mr. Haroon. Thank you very much.
Suspense, in which Miss Mary Jane Croft starred in tonight's presentation of Beirut by Sunrise.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from May 31st, 1955 on CBS. That brings to a close this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.